Blog Talk Radio.
At 2 years old, she didn't speak or babble. She made no eye contact and bristled at physical touch. Yet her Sunday school teachers carefully tweaked lessons and class routines to accommodate her autism. Thanks to their enormous love and the flexibility of Heart Shaper Sunday School curriculum, the first word she ever spoke was the name of Jesus. Her name is Jilly, and she's a future Heart Shaper graduate. Heart Shaper for toddlers through preteens is proud to sponsor Shaping Special Hearts.
Welcome to Shaping Special Hearts. I am your host, Vanji Rodenbeck. This show highlights ministry to and with people with special needs and their families. And we seek to resource, equip, encourage, and empower those who minister to, with, and alongside them. You can call in our show today at 424-258-9286. But if you are a little shy, we want you to know that you can also join our live chat at cmconnect.org. We have someone manning a chat room there. You can just put in your question. It will get shot across to me, and I am glad to pose that question to today's guest because we have a great conversation today about something that most churches who would be tuning into our show at one point or another are going to ask, and that is, how can I start a special needs ministry that is going to work for our church? There are a lot of different approaches, different ways you can do this, as many ways as there are churches. And we all know that every church is different, has a different personality based on the people that are there, the architecture of the church, the age of the church, and not to mention the needs of the community around the church. So, of course, there are just a myriad of ways to begin your ministry, emphasis for your ministry. So, yes, there's a bunch of ways you can do it, and there are ways that are going to be more applicable to you and your church. And I have an on-the-ground expert today who has done it, who approached it, and asked the kind of questions that I think are going to be helpful for you to ask. You may not do it exactly the way my friend Sally has done it, but what I want you to hear are the kind of questions that my friend Sally Brown asked when she approached her ministry, because she just asked wise questions. Now, Sally Brown is just an on-the-ground expert for special needs ministry at Ada Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. In her 8.5-year tenure as special needs coordinator there, she has taken this ministry from dream to reality. And armed with a wealth of practical information, she's going to walk us through the making of that dream. Now, Sally, we're so glad to have you here today, and we've found that everybody comes to, all of us come to this ministry through a different path, and you have a great story, and we always ask our guests, can you share your story with our listeners so they can hear how you became involved in building this dream of a special needs ministry at your church?
Sure. I was a mother of young children, so I was attending a MOPS group at a different church, and at this church, they were talking on the last day about if somebody new came and they wanted to join a MOPS group, but it was full, and so they had to be put on a waiting list. And I started thinking, our church is a big church. We should have a MOPS church at our church. So I ended up starting a MOPS group at Ada Bible Church, and as a volunteer under the Family Ministries umbrella. And so after a few years of being a MOPS coordinator at our church, they were hiring for a few different positions. They were hiring for a nursery coordinator. So the family ministries pastors asked me, hey, do you want to apply for this nursery coordinator position? So I said, sure, because a lot of times churches hire key volunteers. They look for sick key volunteers. And when I went into my interview, they saw on my resume my special needs background, because I do have a degree in special needs, but I had stopped teaching when I became a mother, And so then they said, oh, wait a minute, we don't want you to be a nursery coordinator. We want you to start a special needs ministry. So it sort of came around that way where I wasn't looking to go do that. It just sort of found me, and I found it through interviewing for a different position.
That's, God's so funny, the way he works and positions things in our lives. Sometimes well ahead of time, and then bring something back up. And what I enjoy so much about your story is that you're going to admit that even as a special educator, you're going to feel the need to learn and get more information about how to do this. Because so often we hear people say, but I'm not a special educator, I can't do this. And what you're going to tell us is that you are a special needs educator, and you still needed to learn to be able to do it. And very rarely do we find somebody with your expertise that still says, yeah, still had to learn.
I had a lot to learn.
That's
yeah.
what I'm so excited to hear from you, is for you to dispel that myth for us. Because it makes so many of us that aren't special needs educators go, oh, no, we're not as smart as you. We didn't have your expertise. So tell us about your learning process. Dispel that myth for us about how you learned and what kind of people you learned from, and how you surrounded yourself with those people.
Sure. My background was in learning disabilities. So really, I did not have the kind of education that would help kids that would be in a self-included, you know, self-included special needs room in a church. I was more with kids that were very mainstreamable, although that was a while ago, so they didn't mainstream quite as often as they do now. But yeah, so when I started, when I was going to start this, I did have a ton to learn. I did not know much about kids with autism. I did not know much about a lot of the different disabilities. So I really surrounded myself with people who knew more. And you can't be afraid to do that. Just because you're the staff expert does not mean you need to know the most. It just means, it means you need to be open to learning and surrounding yourself and not being intimidated by people who know a lot more than you. So thankfully, a family had joined our church where the man had been a youth pastor at a different church, and he was retiring from that, and they joined our church. And he knew a lot about special needs, and so this family wanted to join me in starting the ministry, and I learned a lot from him. I went to a school in a autism room, and the teacher helped me. I didn't, you know, she had a cuddle swing, she had resources, she had a schedule chart, all of those things I didn't know about. So I learned, she let me take books home and learn a lot that way. So a lot of my volunteers are either parapros for kids with special needs. Some of them are OTs or PTs or teachers. So it just seems like the right people were around at the right time. And then I sought out two professionals in the field so that I could learn how to set kids up best for success at church.
And you told me that you actually went and observed some places to even as to get that feel for what those environments could be like, and the people were receptive to that, right?
Oh yeah,
I think it's important to know that is an option that we've got.
Yeah, the teacher, the principal of the school that I went to was super welcoming. People are very excited about helping something like this get going. Families are struggling, and they can be hurting. It can be very hard. So anything the church or community can do to help the families, professionals really love to be involved in equipping the church or anybody else to care for families.
And that's something, you know, very often we would just assume we might not have that option.
Yeah,
so
don't be afraid to ask.
Right. I completely agree.
A lot of communities have, like, kids program, like early on or early development programs for kids, and they have a lot of, I don't know, you check in your community, like if there's an early on or an early childhood development program, a lot of times they have, like, sensory rooms, with a swing or a ball pit or a scooter or whatever. And some of those things can be pretty affordable. Sometimes you can get donations, but those also, those areas will give good ideas as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, like I said, there's so many needs every church mm-hmm. might have based on their community. So there were many directions you could have taken from your mm-hmm. starting point. So many different ways you could have gone.
Sure.
How did you decide the best way to serve your families at Ada Bible Church?
What we did to start out was we put an announcement in the bulletin of if you have a child with special needs or if you know of somebody who has a child with special needs, we would love to serve them at Ada Bible Church. So we hosted a dinner. We invited them to come to a dinner free of charge. We did provide childcare for people who needed it. Most people did not take us up on that, but a few people did. So we hosted a dinner free to them with free childcare. And in that dinner, we had a conversation. What do you need? What are struggles your family's having? What would you like to see? How could the church serve you? Would a parent night out be beneficial? Would a parent support group be beneficial? What do you feel like you need and, you know, to that the church could provide for you? And we got good feedback from that. And it was also just and they were already being served by, you know, us caring for them, wanting to know, providing a meal. And so we had some really good open conversations. I think we started out just having them write it down, and then we collected those. But then, you know, I had, like I said, that man who had been the youth pastor, his family, you know, we were serving them, but then sitting with them and eating and having conversations as well. So we had them write down the answers to those questions, and we were also talking about it. And we also just wanted them to meet each other. Like, they might not know. If you have a larger church, you know, sometimes you don't connect with people that might be in the same boat as you, and so they were able to talk with each other and make some connections there as well.
And what were the directions you immediately went from that dinner?
So immediately we went with having a self-contained room, which was the plan anyway.
Right.
And then we did decide to host a once-a-month parent night out, and then we decided to also do every other week parent support group. So that's what we started off with. And respite can, the parent night out, it's also can be called, you know, like a respite. And I don't want anybody to feel a little scared off by that, because there are some churches that do a all day, you know, big, huge respite deal. And we do a 2 hour, 5 to 7 once a month. They can drop off their kids and the siblings. And we have pizza and food and watch a movie and do crafts and play games while the parents go out to dinner or go shopping or something. But it doesn't have to be a big, big, long day where you need a ton of volunteers. It can be, you know, whatever works for your church and your volunteers and, you know, the special needs coordinator. It works within their schedule too. So that's what we start out, because it kind of sounds really big. Like, we started out with a parent night out and a parent support group and a class. I mean, that sounds big and like a lot, but it was only 2 hours once a month and then every other week for the parent support group.
Yeah. Like you're saying, practically, schedule-wise,
yeah.
It wasn't
right.
as much calendar-wise. And I agree
right.
with you about the respite. It's a very relationally based event.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And listeners, we have done some other shows with people that have done respite, and I invite you to go back on our Shaping Special Hearts blog talk archives and look at some of those, because they reflect very, very much what Sally just said about it being a time mm-hmm. of pizza and games and crafts and playing with toys on a very small scale
mm-hmm.
can just mean
mm-hmm.
so much to a family.
Well,
Sally, many of our listeners may be thinking about, they're hearing it and they're saying, okay, I'm with you so far, but they just may see in front of them all the challenges
mm-hmm.
as they're seeking to begin a ministry. And I'm
sure.
You can honestly say that you had challenges too. So let's
mm-hmm.
just go ahead. Can you share any of those challenges and how you just have faced those so that we can go ahead and take some of the tension out of that, some of the air out of some of that
balloon. Right. Well, when I started this 8.5 years ago, there weren't a ton of resources out yet. So some of my stuff was just trial and error. And so you guys can learn off of me. But some of the challenges are when you're working at a church, whether you're doing this as a volunteer or as a staff member, every church department is super passionate about their ministry. So if you need a room for space, another ministry also might want that space, and because they're very passionate about their ministry. So sometimes working among the church leadership for space or for budget money or for, you know, different things like that can be challenging. And then another area I found, and I still find, is that it seems like the more severe a child's disabilities, well, I shouldn't say it. Sometimes it can be hard to get information out of parents. So,
right.
And sometimes my most severe kids, I get the least amount of information out of my parents. So that's why it, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, later, but a good interview questionnaire for intake forms is very important. And I kind of learned that the hard way. But now there are so many great resources out there for you to pick up off of that. But even in the regular education classes, it seems like a parent kind of sometimes just wants to sneak their kid in, somebody who might have ADHD and the parents take them off their medication for the weekend, or they just don't want to tell the staff for some reason. Those are tricky ones of when the parents don't disclose the information to us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So those things happen. You're going to just wade through those things. And I can tell you that they'll happen when you're small, and they happen when you're big. They happen at all sizes of churches. As far as getting information, that will be something that even with a good information form, which we are going to talk about, good processes for getting information in just a couple of questions, that's something that you will have, you develop a posture for being able to do, but you always just work through, you know, these are challenges that just don't go away. So, I guess the point you and I are trying to make is that it's not worth not doing. Because that challenge didn't go away, right? I mean, you haven't found in 8.5 years that stops, right?
Right. It doesn't stop, and it's okay. You know, I think if we can look at it, like if you have a staff issue because they want space or they want whatever, you know, they have a God-called ministry as well, and they're passionate about it. And to come from a place of understanding and working together, and how can we, you know, share the space, or how can, you know, in one of the campuses I'm sharing a room because it's used as a education multi-purpose room during the week. So I've had to tweak how it looks and how we have stuff put away, and my volunteers get stuff out every morning. You know, try to come up with creative solutions that work for both of you. And then with the parents, you know, that you just have to, you can work through that. And just know that, you know, in anything, you're going to have your bumps in the road or your challenges, but it is so absolutely worth doing. It is so much fun. The kids are so much fun. The volunteers are so fun. It is so fulfilling. So there are bumps in the road, but definitely nothing that you should feel like, oh, I can't get past this. It's definitely worth pushing past that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, every church we've said is different in what they're going to need to offer, what they find that their families are going to ask for, and the level of the families affected by disability. Can you give us an example by telling us how your Sunday mornings are structured, the kind of things that you found yourself offering now at this point?
We have self-contained rooms, and we have kids with buddies. Like I said, we're a multi-campus church, so like at one of the locations, we have two fairly good-sized self-contained rooms. And one, I've been able to make like a sensory room. We have a cuddle swing and a scooter ramp and, you know, like a crash pit type of thing. And then the other room is more like a couch and more toys, a craft table, like that kind of thing. But at our other two campuses, I have smaller rooms. I have like just a small, regular sized, probably not even as big as a school classroom sized room. So we've had to, you know, kind of work it a little different depending on the size. I don't have a swing, cuddle swing in those rooms. I don't have a scooter ramp or anything like that, but we have lots of fun things the kids like to do and a couch and a TV and a DVD. And then, you know, the kids in the regular program have a buddy and they go through the morning with their buddy because usually they just need a little help staying on track and focusing or something to do with their hands or, you know, to be taken aside and maybe if they get a little too overstimulated or something. But for the most part, if they're with a buddy, they can handle it just fine.
Okay. So let's talk about some strategies that you've used and supports that you have in place. Because it's clear, you know, that all of these are going to, you know, need support from what we've talked about in registration to the kind of supports for being in some of these regular classrooms. So let's tackle getting information for first, since we've already brought that up. Tell us about registering children and taking in information the best way you found it. That I'm sure you've changed your processes over the years. So if you want to talk about what you did first and then how you've moved through that. Tell us about, you know, let us learn from you and your mistakes. How you guys have grown and done it.
I'm fine with that. Okay, so what we have done is I had a basic intake form, just, you know, the child's name, age, diagnosis. I think we did, like, strengths and weaknesses and what they like, those kinds of things. I think I got a little ahead of the game because I had that children's ministry pastor that was helping me start it, so he was able to give me some good information for an intake form, what upsets the child, what helps them, those kinds of things. There are great resources on different blogs and in different books and at different churches on great intake forms, and most people just offer that for free. You can just copy it down. But we've tweaked it a little bit so that, well, now we have online registration for all kids. So if on the online registration they click a special need, you know, that your child has special needs, it kicks them into kind of an online intake form where we ask the name, the diagnosis, the grade, the school placement, strengths, weaknesses, any special bathroom needs, any triggers like noise or overstimulated or tends to run, like different things like that. Different churches have different policies for things. So at my church, we do not change diapers. This is for an example. So if I would have an older student who needed a diaper change, then we put their call number up and their parent would have to come back or even help in the bathroom. We don't help in the bathroom past age five. So the intake form goes through all of those things. What happens when your child gets upset? Do they become violent? Do they run? Do they shut down? Do they cry? How can we help them? Those things. And then from my intake form, I usually type it all up, and I like to put on the parents' names, the siblings' names and ages, and then the child's call number also. And then I keep all of those in a file in the room for my volunteers to refer to.
Okay.
So I don't know if you want more specific about it. I don't have an intake form in front of me right now, but I want to get as much information. What does the child love? Because if they love Hot Wheels, I want to make sure I have Hot Wheels in the car or in that room. Like, what do they love to do, and how can we best help them through any situation?
Absolutely. Now, you told me when you and I talked on our pre-interview that at some mm-hmm. point you usually find it helpful to do a personal touch, and that a mm-hmm. lot of times there's a phone call, and sometimes you've even found it helpful to do a pre-visit. Can you talk about that, how that's beneficial?
Anytime I get a registration, I always call a parent, because you can just have more in-depth conversations about things. Like if they check off 10 to run, I want to know why would they run? Can you tell if they're getting ready to run? I have one kid who's a runner, and he just thinks it's fun. Like he's not trying to be bad at all. He's not upset. He thinks it's a game. So anytime I get a registration, I always call the parent, because they're nervous about sending their mm-hmm. child to a new room, and they want to get to know us, and I want to get to know them. So, yeah, I always do call. And then what was your second question?
You talked about a pre-visit.
Oh, yeah. So sometimes kids, especially kids with anxiety, I have had them come in before, or if they've come to the class and it did not go well, I'll bring them in during the week when no other kids are there, no one else is at church. We can just come in and they can explore the room, get out all the toys to play. And that can be really helpful too, because then I can watch how the parent is interacting with them. If they have siblings with them and the siblings are bothering them, I can hear the language the mom is using. I had one pre-visit where the boy, like they had picked up all these marbles and then the boy just sort of threw them all over the place. And she so calmly said, "Is this the light Brandon or the dark Brandon?" And he said, "Light Brandon." And she said, really? And he said, "Dark Brandon." And I would have never thought to use that language with him. But I could observe the mom. She modeled it. And so now I know it to train my volunteers, and if I'm ever with them, that we can use the same language. If the mom, the school, you know, if the parents, the school, and the church, if we are all using the same language and working with them the same way, they're just going to have all the more chance for success. So I find it hugely beneficial to bring them in before a Sunday morning, or if something would happen and we need to, you know, go over it again or have them explore the room so they feel more comfortable. It's really beneficial.
And I have to say, from my own experience on both sides of the table, as a special mm-hmm. needs parent and as a children's minister, it is, in my experience on both sides, some of the most valuable time you can spend is in that phone call, and if it's mm-hmm. beneficial in that pre-visit. Mm-hmm. I made phone calls to every child with special needs registered for Vacation Bible School this year.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. Several of the parents were honestly most immediately concerned that I was calling to say they couldn't come. And I worked right. very hard to get out my story about having a special needs child very, very quickly. To alleviate their anxiety, but it brought afresh to me how they're not used to that, how unaccustomed they are to someone calling to have a positive conversation about their child. Okay. And one family, I had a message on my office phone the next morning. The mom said, "You know, when my husband got home from work, I told him how you had called just to say you were excited about getting to know our daughter. And I just had to call you back tonight and leave a message and tell you how much I meant to us." Mm-hmm. It was really, as the writer of Proverbs said, apples of gold and settings of silver. It was so valuable to them. And so simple for us, really, as ministry leaders, whether you're paid or you're volunteered, it doesn't matter. It was just ministry. And it seems like such a small strategy, but I'm so happy, Sally, to hear you say that. As well as the pre-visit. So wonderful. Well, let's talk about
I've had parents cry on the phone with me. Like, they're so, you know, they'll be so nervous. Like, my kid has Tourette's and they say the F word. I don't know if I can bring them to church. Yeah, you can bring them to church. We will work on it. You know, like, let us know what you're doing. We will follow. You know, my kid, I felt so judged by my family and by my previous church, because they just thought I wasn't disciplining enough. And I was like, no, you come. Our volunteers love these kids. We will love your child. And they cry on the phone. They just can't believe it.
They do. They do. Mm-hmm. I've had that happen as well. You will never be so glad you made a phone call. And if you're one that says, oh, I could just never, I would just feel so awkward making that phone call, it'll take you one to change your heart about that forever. You'll only have to do it once to where you will never feel awkward about doing it again. I promise you that, listeners. It'll change how you feel about that. Let's talk about in the classroom. Now, I know that, again, from the ministry standpoint, and this was with my very own child, when he was very young, we just had a really hard time keeping him in the classroom. And there was a big concern that we were going to have to say no to classroom rules in order to keep him in there. And it was difficult. And there were behavior issues. And it was hard to say, how are we going to ask him for proper behavior, knowing he has a special need? So how do we reinforce rules at the same time with providing him accommodations? Are we going to start saying no to all rules for this child? And that's a big fear, just to be honest. That can be a large fear that a lot of people have. If you're in a situation to where maybe we don't have enough room for a separate room, or maybe there's no space for a sensory room or a take-a-break room right now. But you talked to me about some positive reinforcers and about ways that you handle this kind of thing. First, talk to me about the positive reinforcers that you use to promote desired behaviors in the classrooms for children with different abilities and special needs.
We have a behavior, it's sort of like a behavior chart. It's kind of more like a schedule of the morning. So usually I only have like four things on. Like we have a kind of like a play time at the beginning. So I might have a picture of kids playing, and then playtime, and then a happy face. And then music, and kids singing music, and then a happy face. And then Bible story and memory verse, and then a happy face. So, and then, whatever you do at the end, if they have, our church has small group time for kids in elementary. So that would be last small group time, kids sitting in a circle. There's a lot of cute little pictures that you can just get off the internet, of like cartoony type pictures. But so what I think is that kids like to know the schedule of the morning. And so this offers them the schedule of the morning. Plus it breaks it down into, 15-minute segments, maybe 10 to 15-minute segments. So if during the beginning, the playtime at the beginning, they, do things appropriately, they listen to their buddy, then they color in the little happy face after that time. Then we move to the second section, and so they know what's coming, and then for some kids, they might get a little Tootsie Roll. It just kind of depends on your situation and the other kids around and, that sort of thing. Or, so if they can successfully, do some of them, like three of them, then maybe during small group time, if they don't like it, they could play on an iPad, or some buddies download games onto their phone, or some have a little mini trampoline in another room. Now, if you're limited on space, then we put it in a VIP room, like where the volunteers like get their supplies for their morning. They had a little area in there. We put a mini trampoline in there, so the kid got to go jump in there. It just depending on, the child and what they like and your setup, they can play a little game on your phone or whatever else works for you and your church and what their parents say they would like. I've even had parents make cookies with their kids the night before and not let them have any, and the mom puts them in a baggie in her purse and was saying, if you are successful this morning, as soon as church is over, you can have some cookies. And so the parents get on board with it and provide the reward as well. So it's positive. It's like you get a reward for, following the rules or whatever during the morning. And then it's broken up for them, so they're having successes more often. So that we do that and with the behavior chart.
I have to say, we use that exact thing with my son. from preschool through elementary.
Yep.
It was especially effective during vacation Bible school.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time he was in elementary, it was almost on like a bookmark kind of situation where he could discreetly keep it in his pocket, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that I thought it was teaching him, and it was teaching him, that we wanted him to be there and we were going to give him breaks.
Right.
And he felt very safe in that. But it was more importantly teaching him that he had a responsibility to the community as well. And now, as a teenager, what it left him with is his responsibility to the community. And that's where now, at 14, he feels more of a responsibility to the community of God when he comes in, to where he knows nobody minds if he wears his headphones during music time, but he feels a responsibility to take them off during the sermon. Because he's always been included when the offering is passed, he feels a responsibility to open up his wallet and put money in rather than, you know, it just taught him to be a part of the community. And we may not think that when all we're doing is pictures of circle time. But later, later that's what this is teaching. And it's always about what's coming later. And these children do have a later. They have a later. And that's what we're doing. So, Sally, I just think that's brilliant. Now this is the ouch part, but I think this is what something else we need to talk about. Is there a time, and I know that your answer is yes, tell us about the times when you have to lovingly call out undesired behaviors and how you handle these conversations with the parents, what these times are like, because this is about what my friend Stephanie Hubot calls equal concern for the community and everybody being safe. How do you deal with that?
You know, I have to just say that is a really, really hard one for me. So if people are listening and think just cringing, thinking about having to do this, yes, I cringe as well. But it is, you know, this is an instance where one of my volunteers just made me a better leader, because sometimes, this has happened a few different times, so I don't want people to be taken off guard if it happens to you, but like when boys reach a certain age, they can have some sexually inappropriate behaviors in public. And that has probably been so I'll just tell you all the very worst one I've ever had to do, and then we can back up from there. That's kind of how my personality works. So I did not want to call the mom and say, your son, you know, is self-stimulating in the corner. So I was trying to ignore it. But then a volunteer said to me, you know, and he wasn't taking his clothes off or anything, but, you know, or else, you know, I probably would have been on it sooner. But she said, you know, I think you need to call the mom. That can't be comfortable for the other kids. But I was thinking, you know, the kids were ignoring it. I don't know how to handle this, so I'm just not going to. And so, you know, she sort of held me up to it, and she was right. So when I called the mom, she's so kind and wants to work together with us. And, you know, they were sort of letting him stay up late on Saturday night. And so he was kind of tired and wanted to lay around on Sunday mornings more. So she was saying, you know, maybe they won't have him stay up late, so he doesn't want to lay around in the morning, and just making him sit up. So instead of, you know, we'll make him sit up on the couch now. We won't let him, you know, lay on the bean bags or whatever. He has to sit up and try to distract him. And a different volunteer just realized that if you just bounced a ball to him, he'd always catch it. And so we would just start bouncing a ball back and forth with him, distract him. But his mom knew. And then in a different case, it might be a newer behavior, and the mom might not realize this is going on. And they do need to be aware, because we have to help our kids work through what's socially appropriate. So they are awkward phone calls, and I dislike them, but it does help the child. I mean, if you can keep in mind what is best for that child, what is best for the other kids, what is comfortable for everyone in that room. So you just, you know, kind of got to take a deep breath and jump in there and just have the conversation. And coming out of it, I felt so much better. It wasn't nearly as awkward as I had built it up in my mind to be. We just talked through it. It's a fact of life. And how can we work together to help this? And we did. And it has helped a lot. So, you know, those are the kinds of things I think that was probably my hardest phone call. You know, less hard would be, you know, they want to run around the room during group time. What can we do to work together to help make a plan for that, you know, sort of thing. And that's where the parent kind of helps come up with a reward as well for after church or whatever. So,
how can we work together? How can we work together is a loving
right.
statement. And that
right.
is not in any way leaving anyone with the impression that we're getting ready to ask you not to come. We're judging you for this. We think this is your fault. That is through
right.
a posture of love and cooperation. And that's one of the key
yep.
phrasings that you
mm-hmm.
used in that. And yep. I think God honors
that. Parents, I believe, of kids with special needs, and I have a son who has a chronic illness, and so sometimes that can affect his behavior. So I understand this to a certain degree. But I think parents of kids with special needs or illnesses are very sensitive to who likes my child. And they can
yeah.
pick up on that
yes.
easily. So I think the posture, like you said, going in, I think to start out, like, we love having him. He or she is fun. And just pointing out, even, you know, like if the kid is hyperactive, even just saying the energy they bring is so much fun, you know, like sandwich it. Say something that you love about them, even a few things you love about them. Talk about the concern and then reaffirm, we are so glad you are here. We, you know, I know we can work through this. We might need to have another conversation, but I so appreciate working with you. But just know ahead of time that parents are very sensitive to who likes my child, and that's really, really important for them.
Right. Absolutely. Well, this dovetails perfectly off of our talking about
mm-hmm.
communication, because we all realize
mm-hmm.
that communication becomes an essential task, an important task, a cornerstone for this. We've been talking
mm-hmm.
about communicating on both ways, getting communication from parents, communicating to people, communicating in all kind of ways. At some point, communicating the ministry vision to a
mm-hmm.
lot of people, important up front, but it's also just an ongoing process.
Mm-hmm.
And you said something in our pre-interview that I think covers a lot of ground, because as
mm-hmm.
you do this ongoing and you frame your vision for ministry, there's one thing you said about framing your idea and how you have done it that covers a lot. Can you recapture what we said in that conversation about that ministry,
sure,
about the way you frame it for other people?
When I, especially training my volunteers and when talking with staff, I want everybody to know that when we are serving a child with special needs, we are serving the whole family, because the child is able to be loved and served and cared for. And the family the parents are able to go sit in a service, comfortable, knowing their child is well cared for and loved and enjoyed, and so they can be fed spiritually. And then if this child has siblings, they can go to their class and learn about God and grow in their relationship with Jesus and with their peers and with their volunteers. It is serving the whole family. And why I think, too, this is so important to emphasize to your volunteers that are serving the kids in your class, is because sometimes they can feel like, this feels like babysitting. Are they learning any verses? Are they able to tell me what our Bible story was about? Are they able to whatever? And even though we do follow, we always show a Bible story. We always have a craft available. We always do music with them. Sometimes our volunteers can't see the fruit of it like a fifth grade volunteer in a typical room would be able to see. So I want
right.
them to know you are serving this whole family by being here. because since you make it so fun for these kids and since they love to come, the parents have an easier time getting ready for church in the morning because their kid's not fighting it because they love to come to our room. So that makes their morning before church easier. It makes their time at church easier where they can sit and get refreshed and worship and connect with God. And then as well, there's the siblings, if there are some, have an opportunity. Because if that doesn't happen, it's too much work and the parents won't come. And they will live stream it or they will just skip it all together because they're tired. So I really, my goal, like if I'm going to have a number one goal, it's two parts. It's to love the child that has special needs and teach them about Jesus and to love them with all of our and their ability, and also to let the parent go to church and knowing that their child is being well taken care of.
Absolutely. And knowing that this is a whole family ministry,
mm-hmm.
also when you come to that challenge of space and allocating mm-hmm. space and allocating resources and allocating budget, that does make it easier too. To say we're providing this for Timmy, because if Timmy doesn't come, his mom and dad and his sister and his brother can't come.
Right.
It's one of those things that is the whole family ministry.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it really is a keystone to this, listeners, to realize that is unlike some of our other ministries. It's one of the things that
mm-hmm.
is unique about special needs ministry and sometimes gets lost and is really something that can help you so much if you can learn to articulate that and say it again and again. And it's useful with so many different groups that you communicate your vision to, your finance committee, your staff, your facilities people, your mm-hmm. Ministry partners and volunteers, as Sally has just said, everyone. That mm-hmm. it's just key. And I'm so glad mm-hmm. that you brought that out, Sally. It's so important.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I want to ask you, has mm-hmm. there ever been a point in your ministry when you realized that something that you were doing, that your team was doing, just wasn't working?
Mm-hmm.
You weren't getting the results you wanted, or you guys were spinning your wheels on something.
Mm-hmm.
How did you guys notice it, and how were you brave enough to decide to make a change?
Well, back at the beginning when we were talking about like the parent dinner, and one of the things that came out was a parent support group. Well, after about a year, the parents just weren't coming out really for that. So I noticed the numbers on that were kind of lower. It wasn't what I was expecting for the parent support group. But what I did notice is that if we would have a potluck for the whole family during that time, like, you know, well, let's have, instead of the parent support group, let's just have a potluck. Everybody donate, and we'll just eat together and hang out. Everybody came to it. So what I started seeing was that my family seemed to want to do family activities more than just for the parents. So we ended up deciding to stop doing the parent support group and doing 3 family parties throughout the year. And in those family parties, I also invite my volunteers and their whole family. So
wow.
Those have been very successful, and we have a great turnout for those. So that was one change that we have made, and I'm really glad. They're great fun, and it's fun for the volunteers to see the whole family and to see them outside of a church setting. It's fun for my family to get to know my volunteers and their families. It's been a really fun time. So we do like a fall harvest party where we do like the hayride, and we have chili and hot dogs and cider and all those things and paint pumpkins and do a hayride. And then we have a Valentine ball where we have like a dance and games. And sometimes we have a bowling party, but that's always in February. And then we have a summer mm-hmm. pool party. And I'm telling you, I mean, one nice thing is if you're a special needs ministry leader, the kids like repetition. They look forward. If
right.
I not do the pool party but do something else instead, they would not be happy with me. Like, the kids love the same thing every year, and they'll start asking in, you know, April, when is the pool party and the harvest party, you know. So I don't need to change it up every year because they really like the same things every year. So it just makes it easy. Like the first couple times I did it, I feel a little overwhelmed, like, oh my gosh, this is, and now it's like, oh yeah, and next week is that party, I better get on that, you know. So it's kind of nice things all the time. And the volunteers, the family, we just have a great time. So that is one change Absolutely. We have made, and it has been really good. And, you know, as a leader, most special needs coordinators, I would say, are either volunteers or part-time. Some at large churches are full-time, but I am part-time. I have 3 kids. I'm married. You know, my youngest is in sports. Actually, 2 of them are in sports. And I don't have time on a weeknight every other week for something that isn't really useful to others. I've got a family. So it's okay to make it, you know, a switch, and it's a good switch, and it's okay for sometimes it to work with your schedule. If it's not working out, don't be afraid to make a change. Try something new. If that works, great. If not, give it a shot and then tweak it again. It's just all part of what works for your group of people, you know, in your community.
Absolutely. And I appreciate so much your comments about just having the bravery to do something different, to try it. That mm-hmm. didn't work. Let's try something else. And to say, you know, it's okay to think about my time too. You know, the truth is, it's difficult for these families to get their children out of the house sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's one more thing for them. It's not as easy for them to get up and get out of the home as it is mm-hmm. for people with typical children. So for them, getting them up out of the home to get them somewhere and then have to plan something for them to do mm-hmm. or just for a parent support group, the payoff on that, interestingly, maybe isn't as much as it was to go be a part of a community. Now, that's mm-hmm. something they don't have as much of.
Right.
Sometimes parents with special needs don't have community. Their families aren't as close to them as there are mm-hmm. others, and you've provided something as the church was meant to do that the world can't provide. And how wonderful that you were brave enough to ask that question and do that. And I just pray that our listeners have heard that and that so many of them are thinking about being brave mm-hmm. and asking the questions that you've asked at Ada Bible. Well, here's our million-dollar question. I ask a lot of our guests this. If you are in the position a lot of our listeners may be in, maybe starting or being at the front end of this, what's the best advice you think you could give them about starting a special needs ministry that would work mm-hmm. for them? What's advice that you would wish someone had given you that you would take?
Well, of course, everybody's going to say pray. I would wake up at night. That whole cast your cares, I think I was like spewing my cares on God in the middle of the night with anxiety at the beginning, you know, like, I need help and please bring the right people and all of those things. So I don't want to sound a little cliche here, but really pray. And, you know, anytime I have prayed to love people well, I do believe you are praying the heart of God and He is right in it with you. So keep that in mind. I would say, like, figure out what you can do now. Like how we started, I started with a self-included room, and I added on buddies later. I added on just the behavior chart, and I didn't talk about these buddy bins for kids that have buddies, you know, with little fidget things that they can do. I added that later. So figure out, do you want to start with buddies, and what would that look like? Or do you want to start with a room because you have some more – you have kids in your church that you can't really have in the regular room. Like, they just won't be successful there. So they really need their own space. Figure out what you need in your building and start there, and then add on as it naturally happens. Don't be afraid to have people who know a lot more around you than you know. Like, just ask a lot of questions, and that's okay. And then, you know, like now, too, there are so many great resources, so many great conferences, but it can be overwhelming. So just take the part that you know you can do now and just do it well. And then when you're ready, take the next step that makes sense for your community.
That is excellent, excellent advice. I second all of that three times over that Sally said. Well, Sally, can you recommend any specific resources to our listeners, any tools for recruitment or just getting by or anything that you have had that you just said, I wish I'd had this when I started? Is there any tools, books, websites, communication, whatever?
There are a lot of really good books now, and there are a couple new ones that I haven't even gotten a chance to read yet, but when I started out, there was a book called Special Needs, Special Ministry, and that was super helpful to me. And it also has sermon ideas in the back if your church is one that would have like a Disability Sunday or your pastor would be open to using something like that. I found that book really helpful. There's another book by Amy Fenton Lee called Leading a Special Needs Ministry. That is a great resource. And she also has a blog called The Inclusive Church. That's where I got the schedule chart idea. I tweaked it a little to our flavor here at Ada, but for the most part, that's the thing I told you about, the picture and the name and the smiley face. Mm-hmm. Those are free resources she has on there. I don't think she's updated that blog in like a year, but it's archived. Like any intake forms and links to different churches that have good ministries and intake forms for free. Lots of stuff on there. If you had time to comb through that website, you'd get a lot of information. There's another, if you go on Amazon, you can find those books too. Children's Ministry Pocket Guide. It's like to special needs. It's like a 10-pack. That's great for volunteers to flip through. And then Key Ministry is another good site. Like sometimes on Facebook, I've liked Key Ministry and Leading Special Needs Ministry forums, different things like that, so that they come up in my newsfeed. And so if they have an article about anxiety or childhood depression or different things like that, I'll read about it because I'm just always trying to educate myself on more things, and it's really informative. So even on Facebook, Google or look up whatever on Facebook, and there's probably a group for it, and they're pretty helpful.
Absolutely.
So those are the things I've looked at so far.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Steve Grievich from Key was on the show in May, and it's just a wealth of information. And is great. I'm going to go ahead and do a shameless plug for our sponsor, Standard Publishing, that has, I know, an intake form and a scheduling chart for free at their heartshaper.com on their special needs tab as well. Just there are so many things. Not having the resources, I was in the same position Sally was in, where there wasn't that much years ago. It was very hard to find things. I was up all night long on the internet just searching and searching and searching. Now we are in a position to where that is no longer the case, and we are so glad to say so. Well, Sally, thank you so much.
The changes.
Yes. Absolutely. It's great. If you wanted, if any of our guests wanted to contact you, ask you any more questions, how would be the best way for them to get in touch with you?
You can find me on Facebook. It's Sally Brown or Sally Redmond Brown. My maiden name's on there. Or you could email me at my church website. So that would be sbrown@adabible.org. That's ADABIBLE.org.
Some of our listeners may have more in-depth questions about how you might handle this and that. And they, like I said, They may come in all variety because everyone has got so many different challenges. We are so thankful for what you have done there and for you sharing that knowledge with us today so we have been able to learn from it. There will be so much more ongoing conversation on this topic at our CM Connect group, Shaping Special Hearts at cmconnect.org. You can also connect with us on our Facebook page, Shaping Special Hearts there. You can find me on Twitter at Vangie Rodenbeck or my blog at vangierodenbeck.com. There will be another show next month with my good friend Katie Weatherby. A big thank you to our sponsor, Standard Publishing, who continues to just strive for excellence in the field of equipping churches to teach and shape the hearts of children who just learn a little bit differently and equip the people in the classrooms and leading those ministries. Also to CM Connect for their generosity in making this conversation possible. And I pray that your hearts have been encouraged today so that you can go out in ministry and shape the hearts of others.
What do you want kids in your Sunday school classrooms to learn? What's in God's Word? How to apply God's Word to life situations? And how to have a personal relationship with Jesus? Heart Shaper Children's Sunday School Curriculum takes kids through the Bible five times by the time they reach sixth grade and establishes a love for God and His Word that will last them a lifetime. Teaching is easy and learning is fun. See what's new at www.heartshaper.com.